This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
So, Paul, thanks for joining me. Aaron and Ronnie both apparently are... Well, it's funny, in our group there, our group chat, they have the title Podcast Quitter on you, and yet that doesn't seem to be the case tonight. If anything, it's the opposite.
I disagree strongly. I birth podcasts and then let my children take it from there. I don't think I've ever quit a podcast. I think I fill in a lot more than some of the people who are supposed to be regulars.
I you know what? I lean to agree.
I'm also going to be doing a podcast with Rob and Daryl. I forget which one it is, but they asked me to record with them on Sunday in place of whoever is bailing on them this week, and we're going to be talking about... my part of it at least is going to be talking about some old Uncanny X-Men, because it's their retro cast, so the comics have to be at least 10 years old. But that should be fun.
Is that over on the Taylor Network?
I believe so. Yeah. I believe so. I think it's usually Rob and Mike and Chris do it, I think he said, but yeah. I'm not 100% sure, to be honest. Rob actually, he just keeps on picking up doing podcasts, I guess, over there with them. So I've been looking forward to recording with Rob. I like Rob a lot. And, of course, I've recorded with all the other guys multiple times.
Right.
But, yeah. And speaking of comics, I read – so it's not old G.I. Joe, but I read one of the Cobra trade paperbacks recently and enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah, you know, it's – I picked up – well, you actually picked up – the back in the late 80s there, they did, G.I. Joe did a comic set in the UK called Action Force. Mm-hmm. And when they re-released it over here as European Missions.
Uh-huh.
And they did 15 issues. And it's really good. It's basically, I liked it better. The books have two or three short stories in them. And then there's one story that goes continuous. It's only a few pages long each issue, but it runs through multiple issues telling the story over time. Mm-hmm. And one thing I noticed when I was a kid is no one ever died in the G.I. Joe comics for the most part, not until issue 109 when the Saw Viper let loose. But no one ever died or got killed. People die in every issue, this one. They create new characters just to kill them. Rather be Joes or Cobras. They kill foot soldiers all the time. I mean, there's a lot of death going on. I actually really liked it better.
Yeah, I was... So you've heard of Humble Bundles, right?
Yeah.
So the current Humble Bundle is Transformers and G.I. Joe. I guess they had a crossover there with the IDW series.
Marvel days as well.
That doesn't surprise me. So yeah, IDW, they're both with IDW owns the properties now and is publishing them. And I guess they had a crossover. So that's what this bundle is, but it has a ton of G.I. Joe specific stuff and a ton of Transformers specific stuff. And I'd never really read either, but Aaron was gushing about Cobra because
I remember reading
somebody else got him to read it.
I remember reading that Cobra story a few years ago.
Mm.
So, but anyway,
the part that I read was quite good, so I'm going to check it out some. I might pick up that Humble Bundle because it has so much stuff, and I've been tempted to check out the G.I. Joe stuff at least, so might as well get a bunch.
How much is the old Humble Bundle?
The highest level is $20. You get everything. For as little as a dollar, you could get just a whole crap load of stuff still, though. It has just a whole bunch of G.I. Joe and Transformer trades for a buck.
Yeah.
So it's, at the very least, I'll probably do the dollar, you know. Can't beat a dollar for all that stuff. But I'm seriously considering doing the $20 one, because You've probably seen I have like the Ninja Turtle IDW hardcover collections.
Yes.
And they tend to pack a lot of stuff in there. Well, the $20 bundle, you get like, I think, three or more volumes of those for each G.I. Joe and Transformers at that point. So,
oh, wow.
I don't know. I'll dig into it a little bit more, but pretty tempting offer, that's for sure.
Hmm. Nice.
So I hear that there's some kind of wrestling thing going on this weekend.
Yeah. This coming Saturday night's the big NXT Brooklyn Takeover 3. And then Sunday's the old summer tradition, SummerSlam. Or as Mike Adamley said, Summerfest.
So as soon as I decided that SummerSlam was consistently good, it became consistently disappointing. So now that I expect it to be disappointing, I think this will actually be the best year ever.
I think that's the only way you can look at it. It's hard. Like, I don't want to be a negative person when it comes to wrestling. I try not to be as much as I can because I love professional wrestling so much. But they're not making it easy on you.
Yeah, I was talking to you. Actually, when I recorded with you, it was a couple weeks ago, I talked about that somehow. I kind of find myself at a point now where I'm just kind of, I mean, I was already, I don't know, a more active casual fan, you might say.
Yep.
And I kind of decided I'm going to be a little less anticipatory towards things with the wrestling. Because I was looking forward to all the pay-per-views, even like the newer ones that are like the brand-specific ones. And
yep.
After a few of them where I watched them and just I didn't really care that I watched them. I was like, I can go, you guys will tell me if anything's good, so I go back and watch it. That's not hard. But I don't need to look forward to it for multiple weeks just to be like, meh.
But, I think a lot of it has to do with the oversaturation of it all.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, that's been the problem with having... I mean, even when you go back to when they went to having a pay-per-view every month, that affected a lot of things. And now just having as much as they do and they could pump so much stuff out there. Yeah, I understand they're... Like, they need to give value to the network. But if they're going to have all those pay-per-views, they need to still make them good. You know, throw some unexpected stuff in there, or yep, some smaller matches in there. Focus on some of the feuds that aren't your main drawing feuds. You know, I mean, if I don't know, Jinder and whoever the hell they're building him up against is the big one. Focus on some smaller guys. You know, I mean. Maybe that's where they focus more on the IC title and the U.S. title, which I know that those can get some focus on the bigger US shows.
The U.S. title has gotten some action lately between Owens and Kevin Owens and AJ Styles, but it just seems like the IC title is just not doing anything. Miz is the champ, but he's not defending it. He's not involved in any... the only storylines he's been involved in lately involve him getting beat up a lot.
Yeah, see, you know, that like seems like the point where you could do more with that.
Like him with his Miztourage and everything. But I don't even think the IC title... I don't think Miz is on pay-per-view this weekend. I don't think he's on SummerSlam at all or even the pre-show.
Yeah, I don't recall you guys telling me that he was or seeing that.
I mean,
there's
13 matches scheduled for Sunday. I don't think the Miz is involved in any of them. So, I know for me, like... Oh yeah, he's in a six-man tag. That's a good use of your IC champion. I went to a WWE this past Saturday in Augusta. Took my son. We had some good seats, and it was a decent crowd. Over 4,000 people, which is good for the Augusta Civic Center, seeing as how it's like a 6,000 person venue, so it looked full, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I'll sum the show up this. You can go read my full report on my blog, The Wrestling Insomniac. However, I'll just say, overall, the show was above average. Just a little above average. And a couple of matches surprised me as far as how much I enjoyed them, including Roman Reigns against Braun Strowman, but I think that's all Braun Strowman. And I will say this, though. The crowd was great. They were into it. They booed the bad guys. They cheered the good guys. And, yeah. It was enjoyable.
Well, I'll tell you what. So we're going to talk about these shows because this is the whole reason that I'm joining, so we definitely get this done, is this is the go-home episode before the big pay-per-views, right?
Yeah. So,
I don't think we need to pump ourselves up for NXT, but this is my promise to you. When we talk about the SummerSlam card, I will give you a reason to be optimistic for every match on the card.
Well, I'm looking forward to what you have to say about that. So, can you do me a favor?
I might have to lie a little bit. We'll see.
Can you, in our podcast of Thousand Holds Chat, can you pull up Ronnie's predictions? If you can't, that's fine.
Let me see. Hold on a second.
Yeah. If you can roll up Ronnie's, I'll get up Aaron's, and that way we have them to
put
off.
Put back on speakerphone so I can do that while we proceed.
So in the interim, NXT TakeOver 3, Brooklyn this weekend. They got 5 matches on the card. I'm actually looking forward to every match. I think every match is going to be good.
Yeah, the NXT pay-per-views, even if they, everything doesn't click right, they at least are going to be something. They're going to be okay, at least. I know there was one recently that we all watched, and we're like, well, that's okay. But when you really look at it, The worst thing you could say about it was okay. There were like maybe one or two real strong highlights to it, but then the rest of it was like, okay, well, it didn't quite work. But you can't expect the developmental group to like always steal the show. It's amazing that they steal the show as much as they do. But
they do a lot.
Yeah. Once you move up, half of the best talent to the main roster. Then you move up half of what's left to the main roster. Well, now you have like a quarter of the best guys you had against other people that are coming up. Those guys got to develop. That's kind of how I looked at that specific one. But all right, so I got Ronnie's pulled up so we can start going through these. I'll let you lead it.
With NXT TakeOver. Johnny Gargano against Andre Almas with Zelina Vega. And Aaron's got Johnny Wrestling getting the win because Gargano's going to be more vicious than before, and Almas always loses.
Yeah, so Ronnie's same thing. He says Johnny Wrestling wins.
Yep. Who do you?
I think it's going to be Johnny Gargano because I don't think you could not have Johnny Gargano win coming back from how they ended the last time we saw him on a TakeOver.
Yep.
With Ciampa turning on him and beating the hell out of him. Yeah, I mean, he can't. The only way he could lose is if Ciampa shows up and it's a screw job. But I expect him to win. I expect him to go in and probably, just like you said, Aaron said, be pretty vicious with CN there and get the win handily.
Well, my prediction is that Almas is going to win. Almas is going to win because... Zelina Vega, by the way, is Rosita from TNA, and I think Almas is going to win because they've been kind of pushing him with her lately, because Johnny Gargano is going to be the Tyler Breeze of NXT, or he's going to be the Dolph Ziggler of NXT, or he's going to be the guy that everyone loves that always loses all the time, because they're just going to say, oh, well, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. He won't lose his heat. He'll be fine. And maybe Ciampa will cause the loss. Maybe he won't. But I'm unfortunately going to have to go with Almas on this one.
Yeah, I think they won't do that until after they pay off the Gargano-Ciampa feud, which that'll take a little build up now. I could see that happening in the future because, look at some of the guys they moved up, like Mr. Perfect 10 there.
Ty Dillinger?
Yeah.
You moved him up to do nothing with him?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
At least he doesn't lose his stickler.
Yeah. Second match on the card, Aleister Black against Hideo Itami. I'm going with Aleister Black on this one. Aaron's got he's got Aleister Black winning as well. He says Tommy will probably be injured before or during the match, and he'll miss an extended amount of time. Who's Ronnie got?
Ronnie's got Aleister Black. I went with Aleister Black also because I just don't feel like they really gotten behind a Tommy, and I don't know, just the fact that he keeps on getting hurt, like, I think he's got to prove he's going to stay around before they really start giving him any kind of momentum.
Well, I will say this, that last takeover, the one in May that, or I think it was in May, the one we kind of bagged on that we didn't think was that good or as good as, I will say, Tommy's match with Bobby Roode was excellent, and I loved the finish.
Yeah.
You know, where he did the, he's doing that spike pile driver, and then he rolled through and held on to do another one. That was very creative. I thought that was really good. I love how he reversed the go to sleep into it. I mean, yeah, it was done good. It was done good. So we can see that a Tommy can work in the ring, but yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the reliability that he won't get hurt. I think, like, if you look at the main card, even with the popularity of, like, Daniel Bryan, you know, I mean, obviously his injuries ended up, at least for the time being, ending his career, but I think you kind of saw that, you know, when he made his comeback to WrestleMania after winning the championship in big fashion, he won the IC championship. So they still had him in a big place and winning, yep. But it was down a big step.
The card, yep.
Yeah.
The tag team title match, the champions Authors of Pain defending against Sanity. This is where I'm kind of torn. I see him sticking with Authors, but I'd like to see Sanity pick up the win. I believe Aaron felt the same. Yeah, he thinks Authors over Sanity. He really wants Sanity to win. Maybe they'll have the numbers advantage, but WWE seems to be all in on the Authors of Pain for some terrible reason. And I agree with Aaron wholeheartedly on that. So,
yeah, Ronnie picks Sanity to win that, and yeah. I pick Sanity to win it too. Probably more just because with how they've been putting the Authors of Pain over, I feel pretty meh on the tag team in NXT right now, the tag team division. So, I don't know. At least with Sanity, they have the numbers and their heels, so they'll cheat.
Yeah.
So they can go in there and they could beat Authors of Pain without making Authors of Pain look like they can lose at the same time. You know, they can go in there and do something dirty to get the win away from
them. I'm curious who the baby faces are going to be in this match because they're both heel teams.
Yeah, that's what'll be interesting. I think whatever happens here will say a lot about what happens next.
Yeah.
I could see if Authors of Pain win and they got to do something with Sanity, because they're not just going to turn Sanity all face, but I could see that somebody being the scapegoat for the loss and that person being turned and the other guy, the rest of Sanity looking even more heel after that, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So sure. There's different things. I don't think they're going to waste this match because it doesn't make sense to book a heel versus heel match where you're going to, if you just finish it cleanly, you're going to leave somebody looking at.
Typically, when you book heel versus heel, it's because somebody's going babyface. Asuka versus Ember Moon up next. Aaron and I both agree Asuka's going to win, and we both have the same reason. No one deserves to beat Asuka on the roster right now in NXT.
Yeah.
And I do not look at Ember Moon as a credible threat at all. And I just feel Asuka's been too dominant for Ember Moon to get the win on this one.
Yeah, Ronnie said the same thing. I feel the same way. I know somebody who, I can't remember if it was Ronnie or Aaron, was saying that they were starting to feel bland about Asuka.
It wasn't Ronnie. It wasn't in Aaron's chat today, at least.
No, this was a while ago, and I think it was Aaron, but I could be wrong. No, you know what? Maybe it was Ronnie. I can't remember. It was one of them, though, but this was a little while back.
Yep.
But they were starting to feel kind of bland about her because it's kind of always the same thing. But come on, that ain't Asuka's fault. And she goes, they've thrown everything that they can at her to make you think that there's a credible threat to her losing the title. And she had the match against What's her name? The chick from Sanity.
Nikki Cross.
Yeah, they had the match against Nikki Cross that was a good one. That, you know, because of the type of match it was and everything, like, there was a threat of her losing because it wasn't just a straight up match in the ring, and Nikki Cross can do crazy stuff.
Nikki Cross to me is someone I see that is believable as far as, like, she's so crazy. There's just the chance that she's going to do this. You know what I mean? Like, she's going to hit the big move or do something or whatever that's going to take Asuka down long enough for her to get the win or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, when it's a last woman standing match like that, it's like all you got to do is beat the hell out of her, and you could do something crazy enough to do that, where if you hit it, you win. If you miss it, you lose.
It's like
she's the only one that really is a credible threat. The only other match that I felt like there was a risk of Asuka losing was the four-way that they had.
Because someone else could get pinned. They had the fatal four-way where Asuka, you know, won that, and then they had the triple threat where Asuka pinned both opponents at the same time.
Yeah, it really looks that nobody can beat Asuka. I mean, at some point they're going to have to move on to something else, but how are they going to do it? And I think it's just got to be with Asuka moving up to the main roster.
Well, there's talk of doing a women's Royal Rumble match next year.
Interesting.
So if she's a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble match, that would get her up on the main roster. I don't know.
With how it looks right now, I could see them eventually having her vacate the title to move up to the main roster and doing a tournament with the rest to be able to put the women's division in NXT.
The other thing I could see is whoever wins the Mae Young Classic going on to challenge Asuka for the belt at Survivor Series TakeOver. At the TakeOver they do before the Survivor Series, November. I could see that
happening.
Yeah, so
maybe maybe they're going to have a big signing we don't expect, too,
yeah,
you know?
I could
maybe
see that happening, you know, because they're going to take the Mae Young Classic now to build. The winner will be built over the entire tournament type of thing, so.
Yeah, that's true. So maybe we'll get something, but back to the matter is, I'd be perfectly happy watching Asuka beat the shit out of everybody. So.
Watching the promo this past week, where Amber Moon was trying to be all tough and getting Asuka's face and on and on and on. I was just like, I'm not buying a single word of this. I'm not believing a single word of this. Like,
yep.
Yeah. Anyhow, main event match: Drew McIntyre challenging NXT champion Bobby Roode. Aaron's got McIntyre picking up the win so Bobby can move up to the main roster. I feel like sooner than later Roode's going to be on the main roster.
Yes, are you going with McIntyre also?
Oh, yeah, I forgot to say that. Yes, I'm going McIntyre also. I thought I implied that. My apologies. Thank you.
So Ronnie says that Roode retains but will have a screw job finish, which I'm assuming that's him saying that Roode will win the match, because he doesn't say that McIntyre will win but Roode will retain.
Well, see, Ronnie does that. He'll be not too specific. He's not going to say who's going to win or lose, but he doesn't think Roode's going to lose the title. So, like, McIntyre could win by DQ or something.
I'm officially stating that his pick is that Roode wins, and he should learn to phrase it more specifically if he doesn't want it to be up to my interpretation. So, in the win-loss column, that's what it's based on for you.
I agree with you, sir. Be more specific.
I think that Bobby Roode will win, retain the championship, but I think that whoever he's going to lose the title to, it's not going to be on their first meeting, because it seems odd to me to have there's two things that I doubt. One is that he'll go up against somebody once, lose the title and disappear. And two is that he'll go up against somebody once, lose the title, challenge them once and lose, and then get moved up to the main roster, because that makes you move up looking weak too, you know? So I think that he will beat the person that he's going to end up dropping it to, and then they'll have another match. He'll drop it to them then, and then that may be it. But he will have shown that he also is fully capable of beating them, you know, if that makes sense. But ultimately, he's already going to be a winner because he's going to have the best entrance of the night because he has the best entrance in NXT.
Now that Nakamura's gone, he does, yes.
Yeah, him, Nakamura, and AJ Styles, my three favorite entrances in wrestling since I don't even know when.
Yep. Yeah, no, I could definitely see Rude having a pretty badass entrance this Saturday night. So.
Yeah, you know, their entrances, I mean, Rude's, we haven't seen him, obviously, since he's ascended to the top of NXT. We haven't seen him move up and be like the, you know, not the top dog on the main roster, that type of entrance. But, like, you look at AJ Styles, like, he started out with his entrances, like, really being kind of focused on. Even now, even with it just being a normal entrance, how they present it most of the time, it's still a damn good entrance.
Oh yeah, no, I'm a fan. Even the way they've toned down Nakamura's entrances, I still think they're pretty awesome. So
I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen anything of him on
they've
the main.
They've changed
card.
How they do like the effects of the lights and the arena lights and the and on the Titantron and everything. They've changed it up.
Yeah.
The music's the same, but they've changed up that, which I find kind of annoying.
You know what I may do after we're done here is I have a free trial of Hulu going on that I'll be canceling shortly because Hulu still sucks. But
I'm a big fan of it, though.
It's good if it serves your purposes. For me, it doesn't serve any purposes. Like, the only thing I would like it for it would be if I wanted to keep up with wrestling, which I don't necessarily care about keeping up with it right now. So I'll cancel it again, and eventually, someday, it'll serve my purposes. But
well, you should go watch the Nakamura-John Cena match if you haven't.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Is that's what I want to do is go watch that because I want to see his full match. I want to see the entrance and everything.
You could watch that whole show. That was a good show. Rusev and Chad Gable had a really good match against each other that night as well. Like, I was surprised how good that was. It was a great match.
Chad Gable and Justin Jordan, I want to see what they're doing. It seems like, I don't know, it seems like they never really wanted to use them as a tag team because they never did a whole lot with them. They always buried them in those stupid, you know, like, four tag team matches and crap like that. So it seems like they always plan to split them into individual stars, you know?
Yes, I do know. But I don't think Jason Jordan's a star on his own.
Yeah, he always struck me as the Rick Steiner of the group, you know?
Yeah, no, like it's like when they teamed him with Gable, it's like he found a personality then, and then now that he's not with Gable anymore, he doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, a little bit different right now for SummerSlam the next night. I'm going to read all of Aaron's predictions in a row because they keep disappearing on me and it's annoying me. So I'm just going to run down his whole prediction, then you can do the same thing for Ronnie, and then you and I will give ours and break down the matches as we go.
Sounds good.
So here we go. Tozawa over Neville. God, I fucking hate Titus O'Neil. These are Aaron's, by the way. New Day over the Usos. They're not even close to being on the same level. It's embarrassing that they put the Usos over as for as long as they did. Jordan and the Hardys over Miztourage. In the revival is hurt, so we have to throw the Hardy Boys in a stupid match category. Jason Jordan continues his mean streak. Yeah, it's garbage streak. Ambrose and Rollins over Cesaro and Sheamus. They sure love tag champs. They don't always get along. Oh, am I right? They do always like their tag champs that don't get along. See here, Corbin over Cena, even though I honestly would love to see Cena win and Corbin continue to go insane. Balor over Bray Wyatt. No way Wyatt wins twice in a row at a pay-per-view, and Balor needs the win after a meaningless feud with the Drifter. Big Cass over the Big Show. Enzo turns heel and sides with Kaz in a no, don't give any fucks moment. So Aaron's not going to care about that match. Rusev over Randy Orton. Losses never hurt Orton. Rusev needs a win. AJ Styles and Kevin Owens. AJ Styles is going to win. Match of the night prediction. Shane screws up during the match and misses something, and AJ takes the win, and he has to... KO has a gripe leading to a Mania match between those two. Well, that seems like a long ways away, but possibly. Jinder Mahal over Shinsuke. They haven't gone to India yet. No way he loses the belt. I'm just going to say right now, no way he retains the title. Bliss over Banks. Someone interferes and helps Banks win. And then... it says Bliss. Someone interferes and helps Bliss win. Naomi and Natalya fight to a draw. Neither of them deserve the title. They're both awful. Hopefully... hopefully his storm... I'm sorry. Hopefully a storm knocks out the power to the arena, and when they restore it, the match is just mysteriously over. And then Samoa Joe over everyone else. Lesnar gets beat down by everyone. Reigns and Strowman are distracted by each other, and Joe steals a win.
Okay, so Ronnie has these in a different order, and I think he's missing a couple, but I'm just going to read what he has.
That's fine.
So, Universal Championship... he says Brock will retain, but will lose it the following night on Raw to boost ratings, probably to John Cena. That seems odd to me, but, you know, it seems odd to me to think that they're trying to make good ratings on Raw based on what they put out there. WWE Championship, Jinder Mahal versus Shinsuke Nakamura wins, but it's a screw job finish, so Jinder keeps the belt. U.S. Championship, AJ retains after Shane cost KO somehow, some way. Finn and Bray, Finn wins. He needs the win, plus Wyatt never wins on pay-per-views. SmackDown Women's Championship, Natalya wins and is new champ, but this is her Zack Ryder moment, so to speak. Which I kind of liked that comment on that. The Raw Tag Championships, Sheamus and Cesaro retain just to lose it to whoever on Raw the next night.
Mm-hmm.
Cena and Corbin. Corbin gets his revenge on John for making him lose his cash-in, but Cena wins by DQ. So Corbin's going to beat the hell out of Cena, but Cena will get the win from how he does it. Orton and Rusev. Rusev wins since Randy has been getting the upper hand on TV. Big Show versus Big Cass. Big Show wins via DQ when Enzo drops Nux from the cage and Cass gets them, uses them, and gets disqualified. SmackDown Tag Team Championship. New Day retains so they can feud with Breezango. And the Cruiserweight Championship. Tozawa retains and 205 Live continues to die. So, obviously, he missed the other women's championship and also the match that was added because he sent this before that match was added.
Yeah.
So, now, if you want to take us through one by one, I know I sent my picks in, but they were kind of just on the fly while I was working. So, I'll probably change them as I go anyways. But like I said, I promise I'll give a reason to look forward to every single one of these.
Okay. Well, there's 13 big matches on the card. We got 3 pre-show matches, and we got 10 main show matches. Starting with the pre-show, your new Cruiserweight champion, Akira Tozawa, taking on Neville. It's a rematch. I feel like Tozawa is going to retain. I feel like he's going to keep the belt a little bit. I mean, it's not like they've never done quick title changes like this, but I think Tozawa is going to retain.
I think he's going to retain, too. I don't know anything about Tozawa. But I already am more interested because I know that Neville can put on a good match, and this guy sounds like a Japanese wrestler, and they tend to put on good matches. So without knowing one of the guys in the match, I'm more optimistic than I have been about most of these matches.
Well, Tozawa was in the Cruiserweight Classic, obviously, and here's what's amazing about Tozawa. He started in Japan, of course, as a young boy. He was in DDT Pro. And DDT Pro is really famous for recently. Their viral stuff is Joey Ryan flipping a wrestler with his dick the first time. That was DDT Pro. They're also famous for Kenny Omega. He wrestled the 9-year-old little girl. And Ibushi wrestled a blow-up doll. And DDT Pro does all kinds of weird shit. They have a championship. Iron Man Heavy Metal Weight Champion, and it's a 24/7 title, and food has won the title before, a table has won the title before, because like the wrestler, the table falls over on top of the wrestler, and a referee comes along, sees it, makes a three count, and awards the table the championship. So this is the type of thing that DDT Pro does. And so to see Tozawa, who was a mainstay there, drop all the weight he dropped, you know, really make a killing on the indies over here, and then, you know, do the Cruiserweight Classic, and now he's the champ up there. It's a pretty great story if you think about it. So
awesome.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that. I'm even more excited about that match now.
So anyhow, so the New Day also on the pre-show, and I don't know who it's going to be. It, probably Big E and Xavier Woods, or maybe, I don't know, Kofi and Xavier. Oh, I think Kofi might be injured. It doesn't matter. They're taking on the Usos. I think New Day is going to retain. They're going to have a nice long reign as SmackDown champs. And I agree with the feuding with Breezango thing. I think that's where that's heading.
Yeah, I think they're going to retain also. And, you know, the New Day, I know that they've been doing the same thing for quite a while, but it's also really damn good. And so I think them as champions, you know, they move the belt around some, and if, you know, lately it seems like WWE's been pretty boring with a lot of their booking. If the boring booking is New Day rather than the boring booking being the Usos, that's a lot better. And New Day can have better matches and have more interesting angles with more teams than the Usos can. So may not be the most exciting tag teams in the match, but you know, New Day as far as status quo goes is at least much more entertaining status quo.
Yep, I would agree with that statement. The Hardy Boys with Jason Jordan against Miz and the Miztourage, Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, and I'm just gonna go with Jason Jordan's gonna get the win on this one because they're pushing him. But
yeah,
I get to see Maurice.
I'll go with them winning too. I guess my be optimistic statement about this one is it's the Hardys, and they tend to do at least something exciting, even if it's botching a move. There will be something in this match to talk about afterwards.
Okay.
I got. I wasn't prepared for that one.
Going to the main card in no particular order. Let's just start off with the Universal Championship. Brock Lesnar against Roman Reigns, against Samoa Joe, against Braun Strowman. I see Samoa Joe walking away with the belt in this. And here's why. They got to get the title off of Brock because he's not on TV. And they need the title on the house shows. They need the title on TV. They need the title. That's my opinion. The Raw house show I just went to this past weekend, the IC title wasn't on the card. The Universal title wasn't on the card. The women's title was in a six-man tag, or six-woman tag, so it wasn't defended. You had the Cruiserweight title was defended, and it was Akira Tozawa against Neville, so it's like, okay, well, there's a chance there could be a title change at a house show because, you know, with these two guys, you know, be believable. And then the tag titles were defended as well, but it was Sheamus and Cesaro against Titus O'Neil and Apollo Crews. And it's like, well, there's no way in hell they're winning. This is going to be a glorified squash match, which is pretty much what it was. So they need their titles on their house shows. That being said, I think Samoa Joe's going to walk away with the belt. I think you're going to see him go on to feud with Roman Reigns. I think you're going to see Braun Strowman is going to be the one that costs Brock Lesnar the title as far as outside the ring or whatever it is that's going on, because Samoa Joe's going to get the win over Reigns to win the belt. And so I think you'll see Brock stick around to feud with Braun Strowman. And then after that, and after Joe's done with Reigns, I think you'll see Joe and Braun have a feud. Because Braun really, really, really impresses me, surprisingly, as far as, like, I really find him enjoyable to watch.
He's exceeded my expectations, definitely. Yeah. So I look at this match, and the first thing I see is that the only disappointing outcome would be Roman Reigns winning.
Yes.
If Lesnar won, they would have to do it in a way, and there would have to be something coming afterwards.
Yeah.
That even if it happened, which I think is unlikely, I think it would not be disappointing because of whatever reason. I don't know what it would be because I don't think it's going to happen. If Braun won, it's going to be him like absolutely obliterating everybody at some point.
Yeah.
And it would, if that's what happened, it would be an exciting ending in one way or another. I also think it's going to be Samoa Joe. And I think that it's going to come down to – this is what I think because I don't think they're going to want to make Reigns look weak. So it's not going to be Joe just straight up beating the hell out of Reigns in the middle of the ring in this one. But it's probably going to be that Roman gets – I don't know. He gets hit with an F5 by Brock or something like that. Then like you were just saying, Braun's going to come in and destroy Brock, but it's going to be something that takes them both out of the picture.
Yep.
Then Joe comes in and puts the Coquina clutch on Roman Reigns. Gets the win.
Yep. That's
if it's not much that, it's going to be – the only other thing I could see is like Roman Reigns hitting the spear on Brock and then Braun coming in and destroying Reigns.
Yeah.
And then Samoa Joe coming in and hitting the muscle buster, which would be pretty damn impressive on Brock and getting the pin.
Jeez, yeah, that would be impressive actually.
Yeah. Exactly. That'd be – and Brock sells like crazy when it's his time to sell. Yeah. Like he has always impressed me. Like he's somebody that – you know, kind of like Andre, legit, if he did not want to lose a match, would have never lost one. I think Brock's the same way. You can look at him and say Brock legit could win anything if he chose to, you know?
Yeah.
So the way he's sold for people has always really impressed me, and I think that he would do it here if that's what was the plan.
Usually when you have a guy come in like Braun Strowman, as far as like when you look at a guy and you're like a big muscle-bound guy – you know, big, strong, muscle-bound, just does lots of yelling, whatever. You typically think, yeah, they're going to suck in the ring. Because that's historically what WWE has shown us. When they bring in a big guy like that, they're just terrible in the ring. They're just not entertaining. They don't last long, whatever. But Strowman's really, like, he's not... He's only been wrestling a couple of years, but clearly he's taking it very seriously. Because he's actually pretty damn good in the ring, and he can actually cut a promo when he needs to. And even if it's just as simply as picking up the mic and saying, I'm not done with you yet, and dropping it, yeah, he's made a clear message in those few words. So, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, there have been a few big guys that have, you know, taken the craft beyond the level of just, I'm huge, so I'm a draw.
Yep.
You know, even some of them at different, you know, once they get to a later stage in the career, they obviously get lazy. Like you look at Vader, where in his heyday, Vader was fierce. But I just don't think
he was booked properly in the WWE. I just don't think they knew what to do with him.
Listen to Pritchard's podcast all about it too. Like he was never healthier in proper shape for it either. But WWE's done that a lot where they've gotten a talent and it's. It's easy to say it either way, that it's the talent's fault because they weren't right, or it's WWE's fault for not knowing how to book them. But I know you listen to the Pritchard show, and I mean, if a guy comes in out of shape and is always injured and isn't acting like he wants to be on top, you know, but...
No, you're right.
Vader in his heyday, he was something, and it wasn't because he was just a big guy going out there being a big guy. Man, he had so many pieces to his game. And Braun Strowman, he's got a lot more pieces than you know, most of the big guys do. So I'm excited to see with what he continues to do as his career goes on. So, yeah, I'm excited about that match. It could end up being a giant disappointment. It all depends on what they do with it. But I think that this one has the potential. And it really seems like they've been making Joe look strong, too. And I don't see why you would continue to build the, quote, fat Samoan to just make him look like shit at some point.
Nope, I agree. Let's see here. Oh, Naomi against Natalya. This is the match I care the least about all weekend. And I only want Natalya to win so I don't have to see that dumb, stupid, friggin' glow belt anymore.
Yeah, I can't make this one optimistic. I just can't.
Yeah, I know you say you're going to, but you can in this one. Yeah, it's impossible.
Natalya, okay, so you gave the optimism. If Natalya wins, the belt becomes less stupid.
Yeah.
That's, I used to root for Natalya because, I mean, she comes from the Hart family. And she's managed to make that not even enough of a selling point for me with her terrible, terrible performances.
Yeah.
So the real optimism is it can only go up from here. Whoever wins the belt after this crap has to be better than these two.
Well, Charlotte, that's all I'm going to say. Charlotte, put the belt on her. Have a respectable champion once again. Go ahead.
That's all. Just, yeah. Disgust.
Going to the Raw. You don't like Charlotte?
No. Disgust with the...
Oh, yeah. I agree. Yeah. Going to the Raw Women's Championship, Alexa Bliss versus Sasha Banks. I'm torn on this one. I would be happy with either one of them winning. I feel like Alexa's going to retain. I don't think it's... If Alexa doesn't retain and Sasha wins, Sasha needs a good long run. She's never had more than like a month or so. You know what I mean? So if she retains, she's got to hold the championship through to like WrestleMania or something.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm going to choose Sasha in that too. She's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Alexa's a great character performer and she does a good job in the ring, but she's not on the same level wrestling wise as Sasha and Charlotte and Bayley and the other one that they bury all the time.
Becky Lynch.
What's her name? Yeah, Becky Lynch, yeah, who I really like Becky Lynch too. She's not on the same level wrestling as they are, and I think that they keep on putting Alexa clearly over on all of these other performers. And Alexa, she has all the charisma that she needs, and she's able to put on a good match in the ring, so I think that it's great having her be up there with everybody else. It takes multiple kinds of pieces to make an interesting show. But I think if they just basically if they have Alexa go over on every one of the best female wrestlers in the WWE cleanly and clearly, they're just derailing everything. I hope they don't continue in that direction forever. If Alexa wins this match, I won't be disappointed because she's good too. But if Sasha wins, I hope that they don't do the crap that they did. I mean, it was exciting in its way with the belt going back and forth between Sasha and Charlotte, but it really did always feel like when Sasha won it, you knew that Charlotte was going to win it back in the next opportunity. When Charlotte won it, she was probably going to hold it a little while longer, you know?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what happened, too. I think Sasha Banks needs the win. And then going back to my prediction earlier with the Women's Royal Rumble, Asuka wins that. And then she's going to challenge Sasha for the belt. And you'll see at WrestleMania, Asuka against Sasha for the Raw Women's title, where Asuka wins the belt.
Yeah, maybe they'll move Alexa back to SmackDown. Keep a belt on her, but take it away from the crappy performers.
Well, no, because Charlotte's going to win the belt on SmackDown. Yeah,
I'm okay with that, too.
Yeah. And then Asuka will still be NXT Women's Champion come WrestleMania weekend next year, so she'll be she'll have held the belt for 2 years.
Yeah. All right, next match.
Sorry, yeah, we got carried away there. we're going to go AJ Styles against Kevin Owens. I'm going with special guest referee Shane McMahon, and I'm going with AJ Styles retaining because somehow Shane screws Kevin Owens.
The winner of that match
feud, us. The winner what?
The winner of that match is us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think AJ retains it, too, because I don't think that they'll continue just trading the belt back and forth. That gets real to me when they do that. Every opportunity, the belt just moves back and forth between, the same two people. And I think if you're having Shane involved, I mean, I haven't been watching anything that's building up to this. So I really don't know why the hell Shane's involved.
Yeah.
But if you have him involved, you got to think that there's going to be another step to his involvement.
Shane and Styles already had a match.
Yeah.
So it's got to be Kevin Owens. So Shane somehow screws over Kevin Owens,
Makes sense. Yeah. So I think AJ will retain there. Yeah. And that match is just going to be great.
Big Show versus Big Cass with Enzo Amore and blah, blah, blah. I don't care.
I think that Cass will win.
Yep.
And, you know, like, I want to see Big Cass go somewhere. He's got talent. He's got the look. He's, I mean, you know, Baron Corbin, I think, has been winning us over more and more over time. Like we're, he's the next big thing or anything. But, like, I think that we have a lot more respect for him than we did, you know.
Yeah, previously, yes, around I agree.
His NXT and beginning of his WWE run. Because he's big, but he has the long hair and he's balding.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have the cut look to go shirtless, and he's not fat enough to balance out not being muscly enough, you know? So it's like he's kind of a little off balance in every way, shape, and form. Whereas Cass, he's big, but he's lean, he's muscly, but he's not like a Hulkin type of muscly.
Yes.
And I think he has enough character to survive on his own, too. You know? He has enough... he's got to develop some stuff, but... he's not like what you're saying about Justin Jordan, where it's like you take him away and he just doesn't seem like he has anything, you know?
Right.
I wouldn't mind seeing if Enzo turns heel with him against the Big Show, but then instead of it being them as a tag team, Enzo is like
the manager.
Yes.
I think
plenty of times in wrestling where there's a tag team, but one of the performers is weaker on the wrestling side, and he shifts into being a manager.
I think Enzo Men on be a mission great manager.
At Oscar, and then they ditched him, and Mo became the manager because he, I don't know why the hell. I don't know if he had an injury or if it just whatever, but like they shifted it that way, and they got rid of Oscar, you know?
Well, I think Enzo could be a great heel manager in the vein of like the Grand Wizard with his colorful costumes and everything else and his ability to cut promos and build tension and hype between matches. I mean, I could totally see him being a great manager for somebody.
Yeah, and then he won't have to talk up himself and then almost break his fucking neck against the rope in a match.
Well, that's the thing. Like, okay, so his bumping style is almost like a ragdoll bumping style. And that's a great way. That's a great manager bumping style. You know what I mean? So Randy Orton against Rusev. I don't know why this is even on the show personally, but I guess I'm gonna go with Rusev, and that has a lot to do with he needs a win and Randy Orton doesn't, and Randy Orton doesn't seem to be affected by losses. So
yeah, Randy Orton's gonna be a big star no matter whether he wins or loses. I hope that my optimism with this match is that I hope that this match is a positive movement for Rusev, because that guy's got talent and he's a big dude in a good way. And, you know, I would like to see him go back on an upward trajectory with stuff. And as long as he wins the match, it's a, you know, notch in his belt. If Orton wins the match, it just won't make any damn sense. I don't know anything about the buildup for this match. I don't know. Is Orton a babyface right now? That's what I'm assuming? I don't know.
Orton's the babyface. Rusev's the big bad foreigner.
All right. So, you never know with Orton. He's an asshole douchebag, whether he's a babyface or heel. So, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, he doesn't really change his in-ring style at all. You know, regardless if he's a good guy or bad guy.
Or his personality. It's really just the WWE's like, hey, guys, he's a face now. The kids just start cheering.
Yep, that's how it works.
He goes up and does his little pose. Yeah, so move on. But I'm just hoping that this means a positive movement for Rusev, because I think that he could do a lot more than he's been doing.
Yeah, I've actually, this past weekend, we got John Cena versus Rusev in a SmackDown special match on the Raw House Show, and it was way better than I thought it would be, and Rusev is actually a guy that, you know, can go in the ring with the right guy. So, Finn Balor against Bray Wyatt. Of course, the Demon's going to return, and of course, Finn Balor's going to get the win. There's really no question about that.
Yeah, I think this is another match where we just win. I think everything that everybody said the same thing. Finn needs the win. Bray puts people over. I love Bray. I think he's a great performer, and Finn's a great performer.
Yep.
And, I think they should be able to put on a fantastic match together. And the only way this gets ruined is if it's just booked like shit.
Yep, agreed.
In other words, booked like everything with Bray and Randy was booked.
Yeah. Cesaro and Sheamus defending the tag titles against Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. I don't care about this match at all. I hope Cesaro and Sheamus retain. I actually like them as a tag team. They have an entrance music. They have a, and I, you know, they come to the ring dressed the same. They have a little skit they do, shtick they do at the beginning of their match.
They've taken what they're given and they work it.
They've got some tandem offense. And to me, a good tag team will always beat two guys, two top guys even, that are just thrown together because they're not used to teaming with each other. Logically, I mean, that's makes more sense to me. But
Eddie Guerrero, when he was given the programming with China, they talked about this on the Pritchard podcast, but yep. It was that's the kind of booking that was looked at as like a knock on Eddie, because China was the draw and Eddie was the afterthought, but he took it and he made it something amazing. And I wasn't even watching
wrestling. Well, he made himself the focal point. That's what he did. You're absolutely right. Yeah. He made himself the focal point of that.
He took what he had to work with, and he made it something great.
Yep.
Now, you know, what Cesaro and Sheamus are doing, it's not ever going to be on the level of that Latino heat, the Mamacita and all that stuff.
But they're taking what they are given, and they're running with it as hard as they can.
Yeah, they're doing the best they can with it. You make something good out of something that's meh. You know, I mean, I always – you look at that, you just think it's going to be whatever. But they keep on doing stuff with it. So props to them for what they've been doing. My optimistic hope for this match is that somehow Seth Rollins will injure Dean Ambrose and we won't have to see him for a while.
Yeah, I could go on my my rampage of how lazy Ambrose is in the ring, but I'm going to pass this time. I'm going to pull an Ambrose, and I'm just going to go ahead and go through the motions about it.
Well, if you just did it again, it'd be lazy booking. So.
Right, true. John Cena versus Baron Corbin. I actually see Corbin getting the win on this one.
I do too. I think it's become a Cena tradition to lose at SummerSlam to put somebody over on their rise to prominence. And I know that they just had Corbin lose his Money in the Bank challenge.
Well, Cena cost him the match, so it makes sense.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, if you always have everybody who gets a Money in the Bank win it, it gets old. If you only have – I mean, who's lost their Money in the Bank challenge? Like, the first one was
– John Cena was the first. Damian Sandow was the second. And now Baron Corbin, I believe. I can't think of any others that did.
So if you only have it be top guys like Cena, I don't – then every time it's not a top guy, you're going to be like, oh, he's going to win the championship.
Yep.
If you always have it be guys who clearly are mid-card guys at best like Sandow, then every time one of those guys wins it, you're going to be like, he's not going to do anything with it.
Right.
Corbin clearly has been getting pushed. He's not a superstar like John Cena. He's not a guy that's just kind of hanging around in the middle like Sandow was.
Yeah.
You know, so him losing it, I don't think it has to take him completely out of the picture. I mean, if he goes on and beats John Cena, he's showing that he can beat the top guys. So, you know, it keeps it where they have to do something to keep stuff from being predictable. So, yeah.
Well, Cena to me, like, he's a guy at this point in his career, he can lose and he's not going to suffer from it.
Exactly, just like Orton. Doesn't matter if they win or lose. Everybody's going to feel the same about them no matter what.
Yep. And then, I believe, last but not least, the WWE Championship match as champion Jinder Mahal takes on challenger Shinsuke Nakamura. I'm going Nakamura all the way.
If this were not a big pay-per-view, I could see Jinder retaining in some way, shape, or form, but I don't know why you would do this at SummerSlam.
Yep.
And not have Shinsuke win. I mean, if you're gonna bring him up just to not do anything with him, just keep him in NXT.
Yep.
Or why would you have him down champion? Yeah. I mean, he hasn't been around very long. Like, with how quickly he's come in and gotten this championship shot, it just seems that they want him to be the champion.
Yeah, I want Nakamura to win the championship.
I mean. The things you could say about why Jinder was, like, I know that they're new into the India market or whatnot, but, you know, Shinsuke's got the international draw. He's got, you know, just tons of charisma. And, yeah, I don't know. Just everything to me looks like, and he's who I want to win, and just to me it looks like everything points to him winning.
Well, he's the man. So, yeah, I agree with that. I want Nakamura to win as well. So.
And so far, all the best guys they've brought up from NXT, or I'll even throw AJ in there, who didn't go to NXT, but he was a not WWE guy.
Yep.
They've all been champions, and they've all had good runs too.
Well, for me, Nakamura winning the belt, he would be the first ever Japanese-born resident, competitor, whatever, to win the belt. I know they like to say, oh, Yokozuna, he's Samoan. You know, he's part of the Anoa'i family, so yeah, he's Samoan. But I've also read that they're just not getting the reaction they thought they would for Jinder Mahal in India. He's not being as big as a draw as they thought he was going to be. So,
yeah, I mean, if he just wins the title and just sits there and doesn't look like he's ever going to lose, like, I don't know, what's the excitement? If he loses it, he could be a bigger heel than holding it, too. I know, like, you know, the babyface chases the belt, you know, is kind of the more traditional thing. Yeah. But, you know, you need your heel to be pissed off, too.
Yes, you do.
So, I mean, you got to give him a reason to be pissed off. So you got to get him angry and, I don't know, see what he could do. I haven't watched much Jinder Mahal. I mean, like, his matches since he's been defending, like I said, I've been losing interest overall and stuff, and it hasn't been because of him.
It's the finishes. It's the finishes.
Yeah. You know? I mean, the last AJ KO match was a lame finish. It was a slow-build match, and yeah. It would have been... If they would have finished it the way they would have finished a match, that slow build would have been paid off and it would have all been good. But when you have a slow build, the way the finish happens dictates whether that slow build was a good match or a bad match, you know? And when it ends in this lame-ass way like that match ended, the match was lame, you know? So they've had shitty endings to, like, everything for months.
Yeah, they've had some pretty weak sauce finishes, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Especially with Mahal as champion. Yeah. One more note before we wrap it up, and it's the new WWE Network's got the Hidden Gems Collection 3 on there, and there's one match on there that kind of blows me away that it's on there, and it's the Rock and Roll Express against the British Bulldogs, and... Ooh. I never knew they had a match. There's only about 10 minutes of this 30-minute match on the network. It's actually the match in its entirety is on Daily Motion. You can hear, and this is where it blows me away, the match took place in the AWA. It's an AWA ring. You've got Greg Gagne and Paul Bosch, I believe, doing commentary on the match. It took place in 1989 in Kansas City, Missouri. And I'm shocked. I still can't find anything showing the British Bulldogs were ever in the AWA. But yet, here they are. So, yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
I think so. Anyhow, you got anything else you want to talk about, Paul?
No, it sums it up for wrestling for me. We talked comics a little bit. Yeah. The only other thing we're excited about is that the Dodgers are the best team in baseball, possibly ever.
You mean statistically?
I mean, they're the best.
You mean statistically, right? Right.
Statistically, they may take the record for the most wins in a season, but okay. They're good.
But the Boston Red Sox, they're America's team, okay?
No, nobody likes Boston teams, Mike.
I'm pretty sure you are very wrong on that one, Paul. I'm pretty sure that statement is exceptionally incorrect. So
yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I've been a Dodgers fan my whole life, but they won the World Series in '88, and that's the last time they even got to the World Series. And I was only 5 then. I was very young. I don't remember it at all. I've gone back and watched videos and stuff, but so I've been waiting for them to really make it ever since then. And if, you know, who knows what will happen, but I mean, Boston's looking pretty good in the American League. So, and the Astros have been the top team in the American League probably most of the season, but they're sliding. So it'd be very interesting if we ended up with a Red Sox Dodgers World Series with me being a Dodgers fan living in Red Sox territory.
At least you could say you're not a bandwagon jumper.
Definitely not a bandwagon. I had to be a Red Sox fan if it was that.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Anyhow, so yeah, if you wanna hit us up on the Twitter bot to let us know what you think is gonna happen this weekend, I'm at SuperstarML. Paul, what's yours? You're at Who's Paul?
At Who's Paul, yeah.
Ronnie's at RonBar316. Aaron is at Aaron S. Bell. The show is
don't
at,
tweet them. Show up.
Don't tweet yep. them.
No, they're dead to us. They should show up to the podcast.
I'm not gonna. They're not dead to me. They're not dead to me yet. The show is. Oh, the hell with the show. And don't forget the Facebook page. I don't run the show's Twitter, so I don't ever check it anyways. So the hell with it. Just tweet me.
That would just be tweeting Ronnie anyway.
What?
I said that'd just be tweeting Ronnie anyways.
Right, exactly. You know, if you want to tweet me other than at SuperstarMel, I run the what did you watch this week Twitter, so...
That's why Ronnie doesn't have time for podcasts. He's managing all the Twitter handles for all the podcasts that he joined and doesn't show up to.
God, your gimmick is you shit on Ronnie. Our gimmick over on What Did You Watch This Week is we find a way every week to shit on Batman versus Superman. Every single week we try to find a new way to shit on that movie and the premise of the movie. And we do it, it's all done... Like, we don't sit there and think about it or wait for it. You know, it's all organically happens. You know, we'll be talking, like, well, that's why, like, most recently, we were talking about the new the Death Wish remake that Eli Roth is directing. And I made the comment mm-hmm. of, like, I'm really surprised to see Eli Roth directing that. And John's like, yeah, I mean, it's not a horror movie. He goes, like, I was turned off from Eli Roth when, you know, after the Hostel flicks. And I was like, really? It was the Hostel flicks? Well, actually, I guess it was Cabin Fever. I mean, there's no movie as bad as Cabin Fever out there. And then that's when I'm just like, well, there is Batman versus Superman. And maybe that could be worse than Cabin Fever. And then the saving grace for it always comes back to Wonder Woman. So,
yep, that was pretty much the end of that movie. Yeah. That movie and the Wonder Woman movie was great.
Wonder Woman movie was fantastic. So, and yeah. A little sneak peek for what did you watch this week? When John and I record in a couple of days here, I have already watched all of the Defenders. I've watched all 8 episodes already. I started at work at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was done by 4 o'clock in the afternoon after I went home, went to bed, woke up, and finished watching it.
So, speaking of watching things, one last plug before we go. Have you watched The Arrival?
The Arrival?
The movie, The Arrival.
I don't think so. It's not ringing a bell.
I haven't seen it yet either, but Eric Heiser. He's joining us. He's writing Secret Weapons for Valiant, and he was, I believe, the director of The Arrival. But he's done a bunch of different stuff. Actually, just stumbled on some other comics that he did today too. But he's going to be joining us Sunday night for the Valiant Central podcast. So
The Arrival, the 1996 film by David Twohy.
No, The Arrival came out last year.
I don't know. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, we'll talk more about it. But anyways.
What's it about?
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Well, hold on.
You're the one who watches this stuff.
Oh, yes. It's the one with Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner and Forrest Whitaker, and she's a linguist and blah, 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 blah. Yes, I did watch that movie. I did indeed watch that movie.
And, yeah, so Eric joined us on the Valiant Central podcast. I chatted with him a little bit online, and he seems pretty fantastic, and I love Secret Weapons. So check out that comic, listen to Valiant Central, and that's it.
What's his name? What's the name of the guy? Eric
Heiserer.
Heiserer. He wrote, his credit is screenplay by. So he.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. He wrote the screenplay.
Yeah.
I don't remember if he directed. He's done different projects.
No, the director is Dennis Villeneuve. Villeneuve. Okay. Let's see here. He wrote scripts for A Nightmare on Elm Street, Final Destination 5, The Thing, and Lights Out. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to be he's going to write the screenplays for the Valiant movies that are going to be coming out.
When are you talking to him?
Tomorrow night or Sunday night.
Sunday night? Oh. What time are you starting?
11 o'clock now. Pretty late, but
11 o'clock in the PM?
Yeah.
Damn.
He's East West Coast.
Well, you do me a favor. Pass on to him that everyone shits on the Nightmare on Elm Street remake from 2010. I thought it was pretty damn awesome.
I'll tell him that.
John and I both really enjoy that movie. So, like, I really like it. So, anyhow, cool. All right, so that's it. Now, typically what we do, Paul, is I'll say thanks, and then there'll be a pause, and then Aaron yells, and that's a podcast, you know, to shit on somebody else. And then I laugh. But seeing how Aaron's not here to do his catchphrase, let's just both laugh and we can end it there. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Humorous.